Top Shelf Sports Talk. You're hanging out in the sports bar with Danger and Battaglia on the Sports Leader, 95.7 FM and AM 950, The Fan, Rochester.
Oh, a lot of Bills fans excited to watch Hard Knocks, its debut, Episode 1, Buffalo Bills, tonight at 9 o'clock. I know Michael F. Florio's got it already pre-recorded, ready to go, ready to watch some Hard Knocks for his favorite team. Joining us now to talk some fantasy football here in the sports bar with Danger and Battaglia, our buddy F. Michael, good to have you on with us, bud. I'm going to hit you with one off the top, and I know that IDP leagues aren't something that every fantasy player gets involved in. Everybody's league is different. Everybody play, you know, some people enjoy different formats, and the individual defensive player is something that some leagues install. We have something in the league potentially this year that we haven't seen since, I don't know, Deion Sanders, and a player that can truly play both sides of the ball and be impactful on both sides of the ball. How do you deal with Travis Hunter if you're in an IDP league going into this season?
Well, first, I will say that I hate IDP leagues because I don't hate defensive players. I hate this scoring. Like, if Travis Hunter is a shutdown corner like we all think he can be, he won't score a lot of defensive points because they won't throw him the ball his way. And that's a good thing if you're a cornerback, right? That means you're doing your job. You're not giving up space, separation. You're sticking with your guy like you're supposed to. Yet you get punished for it because you don't get the tech. Like, one of my best examples is there was a few years ago where, like, the strategy became just throw the ball to Malcolm Butler when teams were facing him. Hmm. He was the highest scoring cornerback in IDP leagues because he racked up so many tackles because he was poor at his job. But for Travis Hunter, look, let's avoid what fantasy baseball sites did with Shohei Ohtani, where they made him two players, or they made him where you have to pick if you use him as a hitter or a pitcher. No. He is a unicorn, as is Travis Hunter. He gets treated as a unicorn in real life. He should be treated as one in fantasy. So I think in IDP leagues, Travis Hunter should get points for both what he does on the defensive side of the ball and on the offensive side of the ball. I'm sure there's people who disagree, but the beauty of that is, like you were saying when you brought me on, you could set your league to however you want, but that's just my opinion on the matter.
I love the fact you have an opinion on IDP leagues. What, you know, Michael, I'm in four different leagues, and each of them have a different format. Tell me, what are some of your favorite formats, and just, you know, the idea that go try different stuff. Like, fantasy football is meant to be played more than one way.
Yeah, and I am in double-digit leagues, so lots of many different formats. My personal favorite is always Superflex, because that then gives you the option of playing a second quarterback. Most people treat it as a standard two quarterback league. But if you get in a pinch, let's say your quarterback is hurt or something like that, you could fill in with another option. But to me, it just gives so much more strategy than a one QB league where at least half, if not more, of the teams are waiting on their quarterback. You kind of got to pick and choose. Do you want to be thin at that position? Do you want to get two right off the bat? So I think it adds a lot of strategy there. I'm also a big fan of as many flex spots as you are comfortable putting in. I think is a good thing because having to go a little bit deeper is more fun in my opinion. Like everyone knows to start their studs and stuff like that. But when you find someone off the waiver wire that hits, it is the best feeling in fantasy. And the deeper the league can go, I know sometimes it makes it a little bit harder off the waiver wire, but I'm a believer that the more lineup spots you have, the better player is going to win more often than not. But yeah, I love like salary cap or auction leagues, whatever people call them nowadays. Like, I'm in one this upcoming weekend with an actual live auctioneer. Hmm. So I'm super excited for that one.
Michael F. Florio, NFL Network, talking fantasy football in the sports bar with Danger and Battaglia. And as we have you on, we got some breaking news that has fantasy implications, and that would be the 3-game suspension just handed down from the NFL to Vikings wide receiver Jordan Addison. Now, we're all getting ready for our season-long drafts here towards the end of the month, and maybe there's some that have already happened, but dealing with players like Addison, Rashee Rice comes to mind, players that might have a suspension in their future, what's your strategy for those guys when you're trying to come out of the gate strong and you know that you're going to be without some of these star players early on?
it always comes down to cost, in my opinion. Like right now, I will admit I'm not a huge Jordan Addison guy, and even if he was playing the full year, I really didn't find myself in early drafts and stuff going after him. I believe T.J. Hockenson is going to be their number two target. I am very, very high on T.J. Hockenson this season, so I was already kind of fading Jordan Addison. But Rashee Rice is an interesting one because, like, he's a fourth-round pick right now in ADP, and I think he is if he was playing 17 games, that is a value. He was going in the third before we thought the suspension might come. But if we hear that he's going to miss, and that's one that could be a wide range of games, but once the suspension comes out, his ADP will fall. Now, it depends on how far it falls, but I am a believer that you want your best lineup later in the year. And if I can draft someone now with a discount, knowing, hey, I got to get by 3 weeks without Rashee Rice, let's say it is, or 4 weeks, whatever it might be, that's easier for me, especially with no buys and stuff. Injuries aren't as prevalent early in the year, like the first couple weeks at least. So I can now plan to have a replacement there. So I am actually, a lot of people I know like to come out strong and differ from my thinking. I'm like, I'll be able to scrape by these first couple of weeks, but if I have now eighth round Rashee Rice, let's say, in week 17, I'm cooking with fire now. So my approach tends to be a little bit different than others, but if I like the player and I feel like I'm getting a big enough discount, I have no problem taking a suspended player. Like last season, or 2 years ago maybe it was at this point, I was all about taking Alvin Kamara despite his three-game suspension. And he ended up finishing as a top-five running back in points per game. No one cared about that suspension once he came back.
A fantasy question that really like kind of morphs into real football here. The Rams taking care of business today, giving Kyren Williams a new deal. What do you think of this in the context of James Cook? Who would you have had on your board? Is it Williams or Cook?
So right now I have Williams higher. That's not me saying I think he's the better player. That's me saying I think he has a larger share of the workload in that backfield, because as awesome as James Cook is, and it was funny on the NFL Fantasy Football Show today, I kind of pointed at this and I was like, if you're the Bills, you should be like, look what Kyren Williams just got. That is a very fair number for James Cook, even if it's maybe a little bit more or less, give or take, but it's not the 15-plus that Saquon got and those guys. But the difference is, last season, Kyren Williams led the NFL in percentage of a team's carries, a team's touches, a team's yards, a team's touchdowns. Like, he was the entire Rams running attack. Now, I know they have Blake Corum there they feel good about. They just drafted Jarquez Hunter. I actually got to speak with both of those fellas at Rams camp last week. Awesome dudes, really good players. But Kyren is still the lead guy there. And McVay has shown us that when he has a lead running back, he is not afraid to just ride that guy and give him 300-plus touches, whereas the Bills' approach with James Cook last year was the exact opposite, right? It was, all right, we're gonna limit his touches on the ground by getting Ray Davis involved a bit. We're going to limit his usage in the passing game because we have Ty Johnson. So it's just a volume thing. Talent-wise, I think James Cook is the better running back of the two. But talent doesn't score fantasy points. You also need to carry the ball a bunch, and Kyren has that over James Cook right now.
Season-long fantasy football draft season happening right now. Michael F. Florio, NFL Network, talking some fantasy football in the sports bar with Danger and Battaglia. And in the leagues that I'm in and the leagues that I might be the commissioner of, we're setting it all up. We're getting ready for the big draft night. And when we're setting draft orders, Michael, I'm wondering, I think this varies from year to year. Is there a sweet spot in 2025 that you would want to be in a 10 or a 12-team league in terms of draft positioning?
Yeah, it's also kind of a preference thing. It does vary year to year, but more often than not, I enjoy being towards the back half of the first round, because especially a year like this one where I think you could make a case like 15 to 16 players who are first-round caliber players. Like, I absolutely love A.J. Brown. I have him as my sixth-ranked wide receiver. I think he should be a top-10 pick, definitely a first-round pick. But yet you could get him in the early to middle portion of the second round. Ladd McConkey goes in that range. Drake London. Devon Achane is a second-rounder this year. So I feel like in the middle of the second round, there is a clear drop-off. So I ideally want to have two players by that point. So, yes, I know that means I'm not going to have Justin Jefferson or Ja'Marr Chase or CeeDee Lamb, but I'm not feeling bad about it if I have some combination of, like, Malik Nabers and Devon Achane or something like that. Like, that isn't a phenomenal start. So that is where ideally I – and hey, some leagues let you pick. So if you're in a league like that, then your spot greatly matters. And you should be looking at mocks and stuff to see who you could get outside of just the first round.
Yeah, Michael, this is – you could say it's a trap or you could say it's a useful tool. We have preseason games here, and I'm so curious to see. I guess Shedeur Sanders is getting the start in Cleveland. We know that Anthony Richardson's getting the start with the Colts. Hey, J.J. McCarthy, we get him back in Minnesota. What is your advice when it comes to, all right, just the eye test and preseason? Because we're all going to be watching a lot of it this week.
I think the biggest thing in preseason is don't overreact, right? Like, look, Anthony Richardson is someone that I've loved in the past, and I still think his upside is sky high. If he comes out in the preseason and is throwing ducks all over the field, then maybe you can react to that. But, like, if J.J. McCarthy, let's say, comes out and looks a little rusty and like he hasn't played football in a while, that's because he hasn't. So I think, yes, you want to watch these rookies closely. You want to pass the eye test, like you said. But it's also important to remember, like, this is a huge adjustment for them. It's their first taste of NFL football. Don't get too high or too low on what you see in preseason. What I look for more than anything in preseason is usage, right? Like, if a guy has one touch and it's an 80-yard touchdown, that's going to go viral on social media and everything, and it might make him go a little bit earlier in drafts. But it's one touch. I don't care about that. I want to see who's out there with the starters, who's in the three wide receiver sets, which running backs are getting. And it's hard because in preseason, the starters might only play a drive or two. But in my opinion, the usage on those drives when the starters are out there are what you should most be keeping an eye on.
F, what about the big plays that could occur that just look different? Let me explain. I tell this story all the time because I'll always remember the preseason, the first preseason where Patrick Mahomes was going to be the starter in Kansas City, and he's playing against the Falcons, and it's a fast track, and Tyreek Hill gets unbelievable separation behind the Falcons' defense, and Mahomes throws a missile to him, and it looked, to my eyes, like anything, like nothing I had seen in a long, long time. I'm like, oh, that's going to be something. Are there elements of that as you're watching the preseason that you've got your radar up for?
Yeah, and a good example of something like that, that is a great example that you gave. This one isn't preseason, but it's similar to it. Like, I fell enamored with Drake May last year. Sorry, Bills fan. I know he is a rival QB. But if you look at Drake May's stats, they weren't all that impressive at all. But then you put like his game tape on and you watch him play and you're like, this kid has that playmaking gene that simply cannot be taught. And Mahomes has it, the great Allen has it, all the greats have it, right? I do think there's something for watching, and if someone does something that you're just like you said, that Mahomes and Tyreek play, something like catches your eye, I think it's totally fine to be like, I like this guy, I want him or whatever. What I'm talking about more with the big plays and ignoring it is, like, if it's a broken coverage or, I don't know, I'm aging myself here, but, like, Amir Abdullah's first touch in the NFL preseason was, like, an 80-yard untouched run, and his ADP shot up, like, four rounds. Like, stuff like that, yeah. I'm not all that impressed with. But if it's a play that gets me to be like, wow, yeah, then I'm going to start to – but I think you have to build off of it, right? Like, then you have to start diving deeper into that player. And – obviously, Mahomes was a first-round pick that had a lot of hype and everything, so that makes sense. It's like, okay, this checks out. But if it's like a fourth-round kid who we're not sure how much he's going to play and he makes one nice play, that's not to the same extent.
Michael, we've been at Bills camp every day. They've been at Fisher so far, and you were at Rams camp. So, you know, just some first-hand reporting there because that's an interesting fantasy team, is it not? We've talked a little about Williams. You've got Nacua. You've got this guy, Davante Adams, coming in. You got a quarterback that, all right, you don't know about his health. So what were some of your takeaways from a fantasy standpoint when you're out at Rams camp?
The first thing is that Puka Nacua has the best hair flow I've ever seen in my life. He came running out And I was just like, oh, my God. Like, he's playing – he's in the wrong field right now. He should be acting or something. But it's hard to take stuff away from the camp when the starting quarterback isn't there. And when I was there, I was watching their fourth-string quarterbacks playing. But there's a lot of talent at those skill positions with the Rams. Like, I know Kyren is the bell cow, but Jarquez Hunter is a dog. Blake Corum, I think, is going to have a much better year two than he did year one. And then in their wide receiver room, like, obviously Puka and Devontae are going to get all the volume and they're going to be the fantasy stars there. But if anything was to happen, like, Tutu Atwell was playing really well. This new rookie that they got, Mumfield, they're very high on him. And they were talking up him being a weapon out of the slot and stuff. So I think the Rams are one of those offenses that, one, at full strength, we know they're going to have a lot of firepower and they're going to be really useful for fantasy, but they also have guys that tend to miss time or in Devontae's case, is getting up there in age. They know that and they are prepared for that, and they have backfilled those rooms with a lot of talent that maybe the world doesn't know yet. So more watch list guys, but if anything was to happen to one of those Rams starters, I think their backups could fill in very nicely.
Michael, on the other side of that coin there at Rams camp, you've got joint practices with the Cowboys. They'll face each other this weekend in a preseason matchup. I'm curious about the Cowboys' backfield. Why? Who are you liking out of the Cowboys' backfield, and why is it Jaden Blue?
It is Jaden Blue. I tweeted yesterday just a very simple draft Jaden Blue this summer because he's going in the double-digit rounds right now, and I just think that he is the upside play there. Like, if Javonte ends up holding on to the job all year, Javonte will be, in my opinion, what Javonte has been for years now, an RB3 that you'll probably guess wrong when to use him and when not. And last season, like, yeah, he posted a lot of career lows as a runner last year, but the trade-off was, okay, he made up for it with a lot of passing volume, but he wasn't good as a pass catcher. He averaged the fourth fewest yards per target. He just was getting a lot of volume because he was the best on a bad situation. Now, maybe that's what happens here in Dallas, but I was going back this week to my draft notes because, I mean, the draft was a lifetime ago now at this point. But when I was watching Jaden Blue, one name I wrote, like, his ceiling is a C.J. Spiller type of running back because he is very fast, he's very shifty, and he has really smooth hands out of the backfield. So while Javonte is the safer bet to get touches, I would say, at least as of today, there's not a lot of upside there. And if Blue hits, he has the potential to be a top 20 running back, potentially even higher, depending on just how much work they opt to give him. But if he looks good and Javonte looks like Javonte, talent tends to win out in this league.
Same question, but let's look at Denver's backfield because it sure looks like Sean Payton is building something similar to what he had in New Orleans with R.J. Harvey and now the addition of J.K. Dobbins. What's your take on their backfield?
I think that is a good comparison. I think J.K. Dobbins is going to be the hammer there. I think he caps the ceiling of R.J. Harvey because I would expect to come out and be the goal line runner at least and stuff like that, and he's going to have a role. But Harvey is the one that I'm really interested in because he is a weapon as a receiver out of the backfield, and no coach schemes up more passes to the running back than Sean Payton. Since 2017, I believe it is, his RB1 has averaged 86 targets per season. Like, that is what made Alvin Kamara such a cheat code. He would do it with, like, 900 rushing yards because of all that pass game work. So Harvey brings that in. And then if Harvey gets more usage as a runner or near the goal line than I'm anticipating, then he could flirt with being an RB1. So I really like R.J. Harvey as the play there. But Dobbins is a good RB3 and one of the better backups or handcuffs in this league, in my opinion. You could earn standalone value. I just, week one, wouldn't want to be starting J.K. Dobbins.
So I think a lot of us are onto Amarian Hampton of the Chargers. You're out there in Los Angeles. The question is, like, at what point of camp does it become a concern that Najee Harris isn't out there? Because I don't know about you, Michael. If it's superficial, I would have thought maybe he'd be on the field right now participating. This is what the agent said, talking about that eye injury. What do you make here of the Chargers' backfield?
Look, Omarion Hampton is a dog. He's a physical runner. I always joke that he was put on this planet to carry the ball 300 times. Like he has that physique. But I was a little bit lower, not because of the talent or anything, than consensus on Hampton, because I thought Najee Harris would have a larger role than a lot of people were expecting. And I thought early on, especially, you ease the kid in, you split work with Najee, however they want to divvy it up. And I thought as the year went on, talent would win out and Hampton would get more and more of a workload. But with Harris being out, I know it's still only August 5th, but the more time he misses, the more I think it skews towards Hampton getting the heavy share of the early work. And if he's getting, like, week one, if he's getting, like, 70% of the running back touches there, I think he's only going to pull away further and further, because he is, no disrespect to Najee Harris, he's just a far talented back. He's explosive. He could do a lot of things that Harris can't do. And Harris is new to this team as well, so these are valuable days that he is missing for getting caught up into camp. I know we still have, like, 5-6 weeks to go, but it's different if you're like Matt Stafford and you know the offense extremely well already to not be practicing. But when you're on a new team, I don't think – and you're dealing with an injury where we don't know a ton about it. Like, I don't know. I was never on Najee Harris, but I had pushed up Hampton further and further in my rankings the last week or so.
Mike, when we get to this point of the preseason and we kind of get an idea of what our rosters could look like through mock drafting and doing our research, do you light a candle for fantasy stars that are still unsigned or fantasy stars that look like they've finally hit the end of the road? I'm looking at Carson Wentz. I'm looking at Zeke Elliott. I'm looking at Jamal Williams, Amari Cooper, Gabe Davis, Keenan Allen. Do you have some sort of ceremony or retirement ceremony for fantasy names that have helped us win championships in the past?
On the NFL Fantasy Football Show, we always debate if a player is a fantasy Hall of Famer. Like, Zeke Elliott might not make the real-life Hall of Fame, but he is a fantasy football Hall of Famer for that stretch that he gave us. So that's kind of the way we have fun with it. The other thing, though, I'll say right now is I'm lighting candles hoping these guys don't go places where I want players and mess those players' value up. Like, I love Keenan Allen. I don't really love the fact that he might be coming to L.A. because I'm all about Ladd McConkey in round two this year. So you're more hoping that these players – like, I kept joking all summer, like, Keenan Allen's going to ruin someone's fantasy value. It's just a matter of who. And I don't want it to be a player that I have invested in or plan on investing heavily in.
Michael, we could keep you for hours and hours, but we know you got things to do. Michael, tell everybody where they can get more of your content as we are full on doing our homework here.
Yeah, you could get me over at NFL Network. Fantasy Live is returning next Monday. We will be back, so definitely set your DVRs for that. The NFL Fantasy Football Show, we're moving to three times. We're going to be daily before you know it in the next couple of weeks. So definitely be checking that out. Roto Baller. And then I do some stuff on SiriusXM. And then this might be interesting to Bills fans. Tomorrow we are recording the first episode. I'm starting a Bills podcast called Bills Banter with the one and only Stevie Johnson. So I really hope people will listen to that and check that out.
Good. Wow. I wonder if there'll be any personality on that podcast between the two of you. That's
I don't have to bring any of it. He brings it for both of us.
That's exciting news, Michael. Congratulations on that. And speaking of setting your DVR, we know you already set it for Hard Knocks. Enjoy tonight's viewing, and let's catch up again real soon.
I can't wait for tonight. I joked on Twitter, there was seasons where I wouldn't be able to watch the Bills because they weren't on any primetime game, and I had to find a way to watch it. And now they are on Hard Knocks. We have come such a far way. I'm so excited. But thank you guys for having me, and go Bills.
All right. Thanks, Michael. Appreciate you.
Michael F. Florio, Fantasy Football at NFL Network, and a new pod with Stevie Johnson. Yeah, that'll be fun.
We've never had Stevie Johnson on the show.
Yeah, I mean, if we could only get him to come out of his shell.
Yeah, that would be. You know, he was the first wide receiver to go back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons for Buffalo. I don't know, he never did that. Is that crazy?
That's a crazy stat. Yeah. That is a crazy stat. Oh, I have a crazy. Okay, here's one for you, Gino. This is a player, a former top 10 pick, 2014 draft, who will forever be linked to Josh Allen, recently just called it a career.
Forever linked to Josh Allen, 2014. Sammy Watkins?
No.
No, no.
You'll never get it.
No, probably.
And I'm being kind of vague, but when I saw this, I'm like, the only thing I know this player for is for what Josh Allen did to him. Anthony Barr got hurdled by Josh Allen, and what, you know, in the pantheon of Josh Allen plays, where you remember, you know, where you were, or what you saw, you're like, I can't believe that just happened. Remember him hurdling his rookie year, hurdling Anthony Barr in a game that the Bills were heavy underdogs,
17.5 point dogs. We had Paul Charchian on. Do you remember this? And he's like, anyway, the Bills went, nope.
Yeah.
Okay. The Bills were 0-2. They lost at home to the Chargers previously. They got wiped out by Baltimore. And Josh Allen was kind of meh in his first start. We're like, oh boy. Now they're playing this Viking team that has Super Bowl aspirations. They're going to get clocked. And that's when Danger, like, okay, there's something here that is different.
I would say that was the first regular season play that I remember saying, oh my God, he's different. That's a different dude.
Mm-hmm.
The preseason we saw, I mean, Rod Streeter still hasn't come down from catching that first touchdown pass against the Browns in the preseason that year. That was such a missile from Josh Allen. He threw that with such velocity, the back of the end zone. Streeter catches it. All I could think to myself is, well, we haven't seen that in a while.
The fact that he climbed the pocket, there was a lot of garbage around him, and this was able to move his feet and keep his eyes moving, like, ooh,
yeah,
okay, there's something here.
But when you see the image of Josh Allen hurdling, which we see, it's just part of our culture. You just see it, and it's street art. It's on the wall at Three Heads. It's everywhere you look. That was him hurdling former Viking linebacker Anthony Barr, who today called it a career. Former top 10 pick, 4-time Pro Bowler, and just posterized by Josh Allen in that game. So there you have it. I remember that game vividly. Knocked us out of Survivor.
Yeah, we were okay with it.
And we were fine. We're like, wow, that was a big win, and that was an amazing play. Happy Hour is next in the Sports Bar. Kyren Williams got paid in Los Angeles. What does it mean for James Cook? And I believe this is a first in the Sports Bar. We've been on the air now for over 9 years, Gino, you and I have. And
9 times.
I don't know that we've ever received this in our history.
No, you chilled this to me today. I'm like, really?
I'll explain. Happy Hour is next. A round of shots and plenty of time for your calls if you want to pull up a stool. 585-866-4FAN is our number. 866-4326.
You're listening to The Sports Bar with Danger and Battaglia. 95.7 FM and AM 950. The Fan Rochester.